From London, we present Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes by Peter Elliott Page. Episode 3, The Power.
This is Tom Lambert again. You have now heard 2 of the tape recordings made by Dr. Petrie. His account of bringing the strange corroded cylinder found beneath a Hebridean beach to London, how it was found to be hollow, and the way in which Petrie and his 2 students lifted off the outer casing to discover, well, perhaps I may repeat the doctor's own words, a transparent green rod, solid, but embedded in it a fantastic tracery of fine silvery wires, and every gleaming vein converging to a hollow cavity, a bubble containing something like a sponge, something that pulsed with vital energy. There now we rejoined them in the college laboratory, 3 in the morning, their eyes fixed, fascinated, on the thing on the bench. Here is the 3rd recording.
Notes, Reel 3. So now we knew. This was what had lain under the sand all those years, with the grey Atlantic washing to and fro above it. It was an incredible object we stared at, but it had beauty too, that limpid green pillar, with its gossamer tracery of metal threads. We stayed there talking for a while. I made a mental note to get in touch in the morning with the head of the college, Sir Edward Bancroft. He was a physicist. I thought it would interest him. Then I locked the double laboratory doors, we walked to the lift, and once again we descended to the darkened entrance hall. There was no sound in the whole of the sprawling, empty building. And yet, as we reached the doors, there was something else. Elizabeth heard it first.
Doctor, what's that? That dinding sound?
Seems to be coming from somewhere overhead.
Yes, it's in the dome, I think.
I can feel something, too, a kind of vibration.
Good heavens, look, it's the chandelier. The whole thing's quivering. It started to swing.
Something's shaking the whole building.
Yes, sir. Drifting down.
But all is dropping.
We raced back to the laboratory. There, a scene from a nightmare met us. The whole room had changed. The floors, the walls, every piece of apparatus, everything was furred with crisp, glinting frost. A bitter cold pricked our faces. But the frost was not white. It was a livid green, colored by the light that glared from the rod on the bench. Then, nearer suddenly, something swirled, gray and curling. It was a swathe of mist, appearing from nowhere. Then another and another. It was twisting, thickening between us. Across the laboratory on the far wall, a black line suddenly snaked and forked. A crack. It opened steadily, gaped. And then the oak workbench beneath the rod seemed to crumble and dissolve. The rod lurched, toppled, and as it fell, the entire laboratory floor sagged and collapsed, leaving a vast, yawning abyss. The rod, still flaring, plunged through.
Other ways of bringing its work to my notice.
Oh,
there was a bomb through the roof in the war. Didn't make half this mess. 40-foot hole up there, and as for the lecture theater here.
No, I can't say how sorry I am, Edward. To say now, I don't know what happened. Well, it's the truth. I've told you what little we know, what that cylinder is, how it functions. I confess I've no clear idea. As for all this mess, Well, we've seen it can resonate powerfully and set up severe vibrations.
Yeah.
Somehow, I suppose, they found structural weaknesses in the building. Cracks started. We saw them opening. And then the floor gave way.
Now, wait, Hayward. This isn't a barn full of dry rot. These floors are reinforced concrete.
I know that.
That exhibit of yours came through like a 16-inch shell. Look at those girders sheared through like so many cucumbers. And the bench it was standing on, we haven't found a trace of it.
But a lot of gray dust.
Yeah.
It's a strange business, Edward. And the rod itself, not even cracked. When we get it out, we must arrange precautions and close it somehow. In its cylinder for the time being, and then... Well, I don't know.
Yes. Well, we can't afford too many experiments on this scale.
No, but we must go at this systematically. Take readings, samples, and above all, watch.
Yes. Well, I want to know the answers to this, Hayward, however disturbing they may be. I think you understand.
Yes, yes.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
Hmm?
Good morning. May I have a word?
Well?
I believe, sir, you're Dr. Petrie.
Yes.
And who, young man, might you be? I don't care for the look of that notebook.
Oh, it's pretty harmless if you don't tease it. Tom Lambert. Here's my press card.
Huh?
We had a report there'd been an explosion here.
There has been no explosion.
Oh, what's all this, then? Death Watch Beetle?
An experiment. It got out of control. A floor gave way. That is all, Mr. Lambert. A floor gave way.
Oh. Now, the chandelier in the entrance hall, another experiment?
Yes, it fell. The chain was rusted away. The vibration...
The vibration. Yes, I see. And that green object sticking out of the wreckage, a part of the experiment?
I don't wish to say any more about it at the moment.
You're doing secret work here while the students are away.
I didn't say that.
Look, Doctor, I write a popular science column. I was on the phone yesterday to Professor Campbell McLaren on the island of Skara.
What for?
I wanted to do an article about the radio telescope. He mentioned in passing an interesting thing. That you had made a rather curious find up there and brought it back to London. Now, that green thing, I suppose that wouldn't be it.
You can suppose just what you like, Mr. Lambert.
Okay, perhaps you won't mind if I clamber over and just take a quick deco.
If you do, young man, I shall not hesitate to take my walking stick to your back. Furthermore, unless you remove yourself from these premises in 2 minutes flat, I'll have you thrown out. Do I make myself clear?
Okay, if that's how you feel about it. But we appreciate cooperation, and
we appreciate privacy.
All right, all right. But you know, gentlemen, newspapers are like elephants. They don't forget. Every news item is filed. We have quite a system. Useful for looking up odd things. If you ever want me, you'll know where to find me. Good morning.
Well, I'm blessed.
By late afternoon, we succeeded in replacing the green rod in its casing and screwing home the plug. So dull and harmless now, it seemed impossible that... However, that evening I invited Elizabeth and Clifford to dinner at my house. For 3 hours we discussed the problem and were no wiser when we'd finished. Then I remembered a note my housekeeper said had been delivered by messenger earlier. I opened it. Inside was a column cut from a newspaper and a visiting card. The name, Thomas Lambert. A date was typed on the clipping, January 1952. And it made curious reading. I handed it over to Clifford.
More disturbance in disused pit. Families living near the abandoned Llanwithlyn Colliery in the Rhondda Valley... Again, wondering what's happening a mile below their back gardens. For the third time in 5 years, unaccountable rumbling sounds have been heard inside the old workings, which were discontinued in 1945. Coal board experts say subsidences are to be expected, but veteran miners shake their heads. Llanwithlyn, they say, has always been a wicked pit. They have not forgotten the disastrous collapses that occurred in 1907, 1917, and again in 1927. And there are other sounds that puzzle even the experts.
Rumbling sounds.
So an old coal mine is caving in. What does Lambert expect us to do about that?
Well, I imagine to connect them with... Well, there is some slight similarity to the things we've observed.
True.
but nothing significant. Why should Lambert suppose there could be? I suppose I'd better telephone him in the morning, if only to get rid of him. Now, Clifford, what I propose is this. A new laminated plastic has recently been developed. It's called Densolite.
Uh-huh.
It's light, almost transparent, and it effectively screens most known forms of radiation. Well, I intend to have a cabinet made, a cubicle to house the rod, made entirely of Densolite.
Good idea.
I know a firm who'll do it. Then we can study it in safety. It'll be harmless enough inside 2 inches of Densolite.
Well, let's hope so.
I think we'd better make a sketch of what we need. If it, you'll find some paper on the desk,
sir. I'll get it, sir.
The next morning was bright and frosty. We spent it at a small factory in Wembley, which manufactured laboratory apparatus. We were promised a Densolite cubicle to my exact requirements in 3 days. I left Clifford and Elizabeth at Hyde Park and went home. Then I remembered about telephoning Thomas Lambert. Reluctantly, I did. And another part of the weird pattern began to fall into place.
That's all right, Doctor. Thought you might be interested, though. I started digging through our files again.
Again?
Oh, yeah. For 2 years now, I've been doing a little research of my own. I've some notes I'd like you to see. But the first thing is, when shall we go?
Go? Go where?
Llanwythlyn, South Wales. There are 2 buses a day from Swansea.
Now, look, Lambert, I'm not rushing off on wild goose chases on the strength of some bumps in a Welsh coal mine.
Dr. Petrie, I went down that pit in 1952. I heard those bumps. They started again recently. I have a feeling you wouldn't be wasting your time. Anyway, look, I'll be at Paddington Station at 7:30 tomorrow. There's a Cardiff train at 7:55. If you're not there, well, I'll go home and write about chemical fertilizers. Goodbye.
Lambert. Well, I've met some irritating young men, but... Oh! I was annoyed with myself, but of course I was at Paddington the next morning. So was Lambert, cheerful and unapologetic. In the dining car, he opened a briefcase and showed me a file of press cuttings, some of them already turning yellow. They were certainly of some interest. All reports of vague phenomena similar to the one that he had sent me. Lincolnshire, North Devon, Westmorland, Kent. Conflicting, contradictory, inconsistent. A scrapbook of rumours, tall stories and sensation hunting. That being so, why was I beginning to feel so curiously uneasy? At 4 o'clock, we alighted from a country bus at Llanwethlyn. A bitter wind slanted down the bleak mining valley, across the slate-roofed terraces and earth dips, giant conical molehills overgrown with weed. The spidery wheel over the Llanwethlyn pithead was still. No steam came from the black chimney of the winch house. Lambert and I picked our way among oily puddles and found the pit keeper in the old flint store hut where once the miners had collected their helmets and safety lamps. We explained who we were and what we'd come for. Mr. Morgan did not seem over-impressed.
The noises again, is it? Don't the old pit will be famous if this keeps up, indeed. Gentlemen from the coal board with black suits and bowler hats. Lovely they were. And reporters. And even a lady from the BBC. Talked beautiful, just like the wireless she did. Well, she's been quiet today. The old pit, you know. And quiet she was yesterday. Yes. Yes, it's about now she will start, if she's going to.
Mr. Morgan took us to the pit head, through an iron door in the brick wall that had been built round it. Then we were gazing down into the shaft, square and narrow, dropping away into echoing darkness. For over an hour we stood and shivered, while Mr. Morgan rolled stringy-looking cigarettes, smoked them, and threw them into the pit as if it were his own private ashtray. Well, then, I'd had enough and said so. Lambert shrugged. We were just turning away.
Yes, there.
There she goes. Never quiet now for more than a few days, see? Don't stand too near the edge, man. The shake will be coming in a minute. Here it is.
Feel it, Doctor? The vibration? That's coming from at least half a mile down. Well, does it remind you of anything?
What do you expect me to say, Lambert? That's what it could be, anything.
Could it? And that. Listen carefully.
Yes, there is another sound. Some resemblance, I suppose, to...
What your students heard on the Isle of Skara. Doctor, is it the same?
The call board, gentlemen, think it's water in the old working. Flooding, bringing down the galleries. But are you not so sure?
Well, something happens down there. You can feel...
Hey, hold it! And another crack in the shaft wall. I shall have to report that 3 copies.
What are you staring at, Doctor? I thought you weren't impressed.
That crack. The way it suddenly opened. That's something I have seen before.
Well, seems to be over.
Yes.
Well, if we move, maybe we can get the same bus back to Swansea.
Oh, then they lock up. Oh, some tales are told about Slumbersling Pit. For years I worked here on the coal face when I was a lad. And my old dad, he cut coal all his life down there.
Look, Mr.
I
Morgan.
I could tell you things, man.
Perhaps another time,
my
Mr.
old
Morgan,
dad, you see, he was one of the first to get a real look at the light.
Mr. Morgan, the bus.
Oh, the bus. Yes, 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 you must be moving.
Lambert, wait.
Hmm?
Light, Mr. Morgan, in the mine. What sort of light?
Well, man, I don't know whether it was his eyesight... Oh, the 4 ale bar of the miner's rest. But he used to swear, solemn, that a coal seam in the east working used to light up sometimes with a creepy green light that hurt you to look at it.
Creepy green light. My first action next day after parting from Lambert at Paddington was to go and look at the cylinder now lying in the college basement in Kensington. Still, silent, it seemed harmless enough. I went up to my study and sat there alone for some time. I had much food for thought. Then I made one telephone call to an old colleague of mine, Dr. Trevor Hughes of Cardiff University. He promised, if he could find the time, to make certain inquiries for me. Then the growing jungle of papers on my desk brought me back to earth, so I forced recent events from my mind and got down to it. But it wasn't easy, with the sounds of the workmen a few rooms away repairing my shattered laboratory. It was a week later that our examination of the cylinder began in earnest. By that time, the densolite cubicle had arrived. Something between a massive telephone kiosk and an upended greenhouse. Thick slabs of densolite riveted together, one hinged to form a door that could be secured on the outside with a steel bar. The cylinders hauled up from the basement, the rod again extracted, and installed upright in the cabinet. When we at last dropped the securing bar into place, the whole thing looked exactly like some odd museum exhibit in a glass case. We arranged instruments to detect and record sound, temperature, and radioactivity. The days passed. The recording pens drew only monotonous straight red lines on the creeping graph paper. The meter needles didn't as much as flicker. We sketched and photographed the embedded wiring system from every angle and pored over it for hours. I even entered the cubicle and attempted to break away a fragment of the rod for analysis, but my mallet glanced off the gleaming surface without leaving a scratch. Oh, it's no good. It's quite incredibly hard. Close the cubicle, Clifford.
Okay.
I tried a surface analysis. I couldn't get any sort of reaction.
Yes. An unknown substance. An unknown function. Well, all we can do now is watch and keep on watching.
Yeah, we could take it in shifts, keep up observation all around the clock.
Yes. The moment anything starts to happen, someone must be on hand to report it. Apart from the densolite, the rod is in the open again, unshielded by its cylinder. Will you help out a little bit?
Yes, of course.
We'll make my study our headquarters.
Yes?
And for safety's sake, we'll fix up an electric buzzer which can be sounded from here. Just in case of... in case of emergency.
Good.
Then we'll work out a duty rotor and keep an instrument reading logged.
Quite a combined operation.
Well, we've seen once what can happen. We must be ready. Our only chance of understanding more about this is to see it in operation.
And hope that Densolite is all it's claimed to be.
Yes. That's something we must take a chance on. And from now on, no one is to go into the cubicle. That bar is not to be lifted for any reason.
I had a camp bed put in my study and took up permanent residence there. The three of us kept our vigil in six-hour shifts, living on flasks of hot coffee and sandwiches. It was a thankless routine, but it had to be done. The next entry in my notes is for Thursday, the 19th of November. Yes, that Thursday night. It was round about 11 o'clock. Clifford was on duty in the laboratory, nearing the end of his watch. Elizabeth Ryder and I were working together in my study. She'd come off duty earlier in the evening, but had declined to go home. Outside, it was raining steadily. The lamps in Cromwell Road had damp halos round them. I was going over my notes, and Elizabeth, as I recall, was browsing through a ponderous textbook she had illicitly removed from the college library.
How's it going, Doctor?
Well, I've been cataloguing all the data we've collected so far about the cylinder. Not a lot, but... well, have a look at it. Read it out.
Right. A. It is extraordinarily hard.
Yes. Composition, we might say, unknown. Go on.
B. It clearly requires energy to operate and to find it.
Yes, but there is no visible source of power.
Hmm.
Right?
C, it can emit light. It
can indeed, and very powerfully.
D, it can produce drastic temperature changes.
But always, as we've seen, in sudden drops to many degrees below freezing point. Right, next.
E, it can vibrate, ranging from a mild hum to a very violent pulsation.
Yes, we certainly know all about that.
There's one more. F. The vapor or mist.
Yes. The most mysterious characteristic. Is it caused by the other functions, or is it in some way given out by the cylinder? That seems out of the question. There are no vents or holes in the surface to release it.
And when it comes, it forms so rapidly.
Quite so. Well, that's the lot. Vapor? No. Just a string of unanswered questions. Elizabeth, are we chasing shadows? Are we dealing in fact or a fiction of our own making?
How do you mean?
Well, we need a theory. All right. That rod is an electronic device.
Yes.
Possibly a component of something bigger. Medical apparatus, perhaps.
Oh.
It fell overboard from some vessel. In time, it was washed ashore on Skara. The action of the tide buried it. It's nothing we recognize or understand, but do we know of every scientific advance made in other countries?
No.
Well, so you see, without a grain of evidence, we promptly start indulging in all manner of sinister forebodings. And we call ourselves scientists.
I suppose, looking at it like that. But there was something else.
What's that?
It's not on your list.
I didn't think I left anything out. Why do you look like that?
That night, when we went in there and found everything white with frost, just before the floor fell in, I don't know if it happened to you or Clifford.
What?
For a few moments, my mind went quite blank.
Gone.
I knew where I was, but I couldn't say or do anything. And there was something about that dreadful noise I wanted to listen to. Some part of it that seemed to mean something.
Yes, I saw you. You were staring right into that green glare, but your eyes were not seeing it.
I can't explain it. But there's not much we can explain, is there?
Oh, you were nearest to it. What's that book you've been looking at?
Oh, Weber's The Human Machine.
Physiology. A little out of our field.
It's that organism inside the rod that puzzles me. I thought perhaps... Oh, but this will take me a year to read.
Now, wait a moment. Don't close it. That plate. That illustration. What chapter is that?
The brain and central nervous system.
Elizabeth, look at it. The formation. The structure. Even the color.
It can't be. This is a specimen of the human... Doctor! The buzzer from the lab!
They must be quivered. This can wait. Come on!
The 30 yards to the laboratory seemed a mile. We heard the noise before we got there. And when we burst in, the same cold bit at our faces and the same flaring green light stabbed our eyes. Clifford was leaning against a bench, one hand shielding his face, the other pointing urgently at the cubicle. Inside, the rod had come alive once more, a mass of shimmering green luminescence. But there was a change. Now it glowed like the heart of a furnace through swirling gray vapor that choked the cabinet, pressing thickly against the densolite slabs. And inside that green inferno, something moved.
I've known he started up a minute ago. No warning. It was just a flip on the meters. Well, look at that vapor in there.
The densolite's containing it, thank heaven, keeping it in. We should be safe enough. But what is that moving inside?
It's a lamp.
A lamp?
Yeah, one of those jointed steel jobs off the bench.
Pip, what on earth is it doing in there?
I said the cubicle was not to be opened.
Yeah, well, I skipped the order. I put it in. Just trying out a screwy idea that the rod seems to have some effect on solids. And I thought, well, maybe this will be some kind of test.
But that lamp must weigh all of 15 pounds.
And it's being whirled about like a feather. It's hard to see properly, but... Am I imagining it? Or is it getting smaller?
Holy smoke, Liz, you're right. It is.
Fascinated, disbelieving, we watched. And we saw a miracle. The heavy metal lamp, shade, bulb, stand, and base, dwindled and dwindled in size as it whirled like a straw in the wind. Weightless in the gray vapor, it shrank to a half-size model, keeping its shape perfectly, to a beautiful toy, to a tiny piece of doll's house furniture, and at last to a black speck that danced for a few seconds and then vanished against the glowing surface of the rod. Here was our answer. To the boiling sea on Skara, to the missing object on the shelf, to the bench that became nothing, and the steel and concrete floor that suddenly opened. Here was the truth beyond science, beyond understanding. The rod had one monstrous, unimaginable power. Utterly and completely, it could absorb solid matter.
Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes written by Peter Elliott Hayes and produced for the BBC by David Davis.